Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, it's time to have some fun with this year's movie and TV pop culture debates, plus reviews of Red One and Heretic, plus Getting Lost, a little Lost documentary 20th anniversary thing. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy.
Trey Heinrichs.
I paid Aaron to put that in the opening.
And Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello. This week's special guest.
Yeah. Welcome. welcome back. Do you remember where the podcast is?
I listen to the episodes I'm not on.
Well, then you can listen to a lot of them. Huh?
You're a dickhead for wow. That. That was funny, though. That was funny. Good.
What's been new? Anything important going on?
Just all the work stuff. However, I don't know if maybe I don't listen well enough, but if we haven't said, we're going back to South by Southwest.
No, we haven't. We haven't said.
Well, there you go. Now okay. We've said.
Now we got something going on. We're going back to South by Southwest. We'll see if you're still with the podcast by then.
Ah, okay. Wow. Jeez. Bazinga. You know where you can hear me is inspired by a true story.
You show up for that one because there's murder.
Mm-hmm. It's also recorded on a weekend, so it's easier.
We did Woman of the Year. That one just came out. That was a great episode, by the way. That's a great episode.
Of the hour. Woman of the hour.
What did I say?
Of the year.
Woman of the year.
Well, she's Anna Kendrick. She is Woman of the Year because the movie is so good.
She is the love of my life, but still.
Okay. Calm down.
John's not wrong.
She's the love of a lot of people's lives, John.
She's not the love of my life, but you know, I like her work. She's good. This is just awkward now. I just don't really know what we're going to do. But you know, we're going to talk about pop culture debates, movie and TV pop culture debate, just things that we want to talk about randomly, just have random discussions about. And it's going to be more loosey-goosey than our normal format. Usually there's some structure. This is a little bit more all over the place. Which I like.
Well, you can tell it's going to be a laid back episode when Aaron says loosey goosey.
Yeah. It's better than
as the descriptor.
It's better than easy peasy lemon squeezy. That's one I can't stand.
You know what? I love that. It is a classic.
I am not a fan. All right. So what does that mean? We could talk about anything. It could be who's the best Spider-Man? Should Harry have ended up with Hermione? Practical versus digital effects, da 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 da. Whatever it is, will people ever come back to human dramas in theaters? Whatever we want to talk about, it's just kind of like different discussion points and debates. And please remember, panel, other people get to talk as well. I know everybody loves to talk, myself included. Let's just try to remember other people get a chance too.
Well, at least he said himself included this time, John.
Said myself included.
Yeah.
I thought I was recording a solo podcast. So
have at it.
That must be why I haven't been on in so long.
We are
that
aware.
Must be why.
Yeah, that's it. So here we go. Now we're going to start with a big one, right? So Simon Kinberg has been tasked, and he was involved in several X-Men movies. He's been tasked with writing a new Star Wars trilogy that's going to be episodes 10 through 12. Now, at first, there was rumors that it's going to revolve around a Skywalker. They said not really. But they don't know what direction they want to do. So should it be Skywalkers or no Skywalkers? The only thing we know is that they have put out that they see currently as Rey would be a Skywalker, right? By the end of the last trilogy, Rey Skywalker as being the face of the franchise for the time being, like as the focal point. They don't really have anybody else, I guess, except the Mandalorian to really focus films around. And he's not a Jedi. So they need Rey to kind of move the series forward. So there's our first pop culture debate. What do we want them to do with Star Wars? And I'll tell you, let's stop nitpick on the past. What do you want them to do positively to go forward? What do you want to see going forward? Let's stop complaining about the past. Let's look at the future.
Except that I want to go to the past. I want to see Darth Plagueis. I want to see what happened and how the Emperor came to be. I want to focus on the Emperor storyline. Focus on the dark side.
No.
I want a badass movie. I want a dark side movie.
You want to go back to the Emperor?
Not the Emperor, but like the Emperor's Darth. Lord. Like, I want to know more about the history of the dark side. Go back into some of that past history of, like,
that feels like a spinoff. I don't think that would be a whole trilogy of new movies. That feels like something like a spinoff.
We could.
All right. John, you're saying no. Why? What do you?
Well, I think that's a waste of like the message that Star Wars has always carried. If you're going to sit there and say, let's go to the dark side and start telling those stories, I just, like, that's what the TV shows and all the ancillary stuff is perfectly aligned to do, is to tell those little side stories that don't have enough care to it. What I think, if we're going to move forward, Rey does have to be at the center of it, which doesn't necessarily have to be, they don't have to focus on whether or not she's quote unquote a Skywalker. Technically she's not, but she's taking on the name because
there's a pretty big point at the end of the last movie that said she was.
No, she's not.
She's not biologically, but she basically claims the name at the end of the movie.
She claims the name only because it to her, it was a sign of being light, as a sign of being good. I would
say, for all intents and purposes, she's a Skywalker now.
It was basically a way for her to denounce the name Palpatine, because that's where she came from, and took on the name Skywalker because she wanted to get rid of the dark side past.
Disney refers to her as Rey Skywalker, so I would say she's a Skywalker.
What I would like to see is her rebuilding the Jedi in her image, and the beginnings of rebuilding the Jedi with all the little issues that comes with, which is building the Jedi Academy. Then from there,
well, that's her next movie, right? That's what she's doing in the spinoff that they're working on right now.
Well, if it's like, yeah, but there's also more to it. There's the Jedi Academy spinoff that they're working on, but there's also more to it, where it's because with that, they can go and bring in other Jedis. But then it's like, what happens to those Jedis and what happens to her as they're being released onto the galaxy to go and be Jedis? Do they become good people? Do they start taking the rock star point of view of it? Because, hey, we're Jedis, we're pretty cool, we're gonna show up and be the galaxy police, and that's what Jedis do. Or are they gonna be like, we're gonna try to keep balance, or we're gonna try to keep things good? Like, that was the constant battle for a little while in some of the series, and they can easily do that as far as a way to tell a story with, and on top of that, adding additional forces to the galaxy that would cause havoc that they would have to correct. You obviously have a remnant of the Empire that you would, especially since these last three movies, there's a remnant of the Empire that you can have as constantly coming around, and also
this is New Order, though. It's not the Empire, it's the New Order.
It's still the Empire.
Theoretically, I guess, yeah.
It's a offshoot of the Empire. It's the New Order, the Empire, the remnant of the Empire, whatever you want to call them. It's all the Empire. It's all the same idea. Let's go ahead and have a bunch of jackbooted psychopaths stomping their way through the galaxy, destroying things and putting them things in their own image. Cool. Like, there's a lot of possibilities. It's just that they have to find the right balance between diplomacy and action to be able to tell a good story.
So what you're saying is you want the new Jedis to, like, go out into the universe and kind of, like, find their way. So literally you're saying Star Wars is now Star Trek.
I think that series would live long and prosper. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I don't think I said that at all.
You said they're going out and like meeting with the people that are from the First Order. You're meeting with different planets. You're trying to find their way in the greater universe. Where's
find
the
their
guy?
Way, like, where's the as far guy? As a mentality goes, because the story now becomes with the everything post New Hope. Nobody really knows what a Jedi is anymore, and they only have all these stories of what Jedis might be. And occasionally Luke Skywalker pops up and you get, oh, maybe a Jedi is this. You get somebody else pops up, oh, maybe a Jedi is that. And nobody really knows, but that the whole idea of a Jedi now becomes a myth. And that myth, as people grow into this mentality of, okay, I'm a Jedi, I can actually do the stuff these things people are doing, does that make me, and this is outside of the world, does that make me a rock star, or does that make me somebody that has a greater responsibility? That's what I'm talking about as far as finding their way, is finding yeah, their footing.
We got that movie, though. It's called Rogue One.
No, it wasn't. That's not even close to what he's talking about.
He's talking about people that potentially could be Jedi that aren't Jedi that are trying to find their way.
No, he's saying that there would be other Jedi learning to decide what kind of Jedi they want to be. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, we got that too. It was called The Acolyte. Okay. We've learned that no, there was good, is, there was
totally
good
no, I said bad good. Sides of the Force. I said good.
Yeah. So I definitely want to see the spinoff where Rey is teaching the Jedi Council and kind of like rebuilding that. That's fine. And you can actually create a villain from there because there's going to be somebody who's akin to the dark side. But the trilogy, I do think when they do that, I think Rey needs to be the focal point. I do want to see one character, and I do like the idea that we're going to have a complete arc built or constructed. Even if it's trash, at least we'll have an idea of what from start to finish is going to look like, as opposed to what happened with the last one where, you know, Palpatine, he just returned somehow. What?
Because he learned how to cheat death from Plagueis.
It's a very terrible
stop
plot
it.
Device.
Stop it. Stop
I know it's a terrible plot.
You are embarrassing yourself.
I'm
stop
saying
it, Troy.
He learned how to do it, so why don't we learn that story? That story would be interesting.
I don't know if anybody but you cares about that story. I don't think I've heard anybody excited about it. I'm not knocking that you're excited about it. I just don't know if...
I am.
I think...
Here's me knocking it.
I think there's things backwards that are much more interesting than there are forward. No offense,
we don't know
no
what's forward.
No offense to Daisy Ridley. I think she'd be amazing in whatever she does.
But I do not want to go backwards anymore at all. Yeah. If Star Wars doesn't move, I won't watch anything that's backwards. I won't go back in time. I won't go back to Return of the Jedi era. I don't want to do any of that nonsense except for Mandalorian.
No Skywalker shit. No Skywalker. I'm talking like go back.
Well, Rey is like, Skywalker.
The Acolyte opened up an area that I think is worth exploring. It was a crappy show.
I agree with
poorly.
That, but that can't be 10 through 12 because 10 through 12 is by definition the next chapters, not the next chapter that goes back to the past. I think as a spinoff, I would watch that as a spinoff. I just don't want it as 10 through 12.
You don't want it as 10 through 12. Have they said it's going to be Ridley for 10 through 12 or is Ridley just doing the Jedi Academy movie?
She's going to die in 10.
They're saying they see her as the focal point for 10 through, like for the series going forward. She's not, they did not say she's going to die in 10, John. Someone's going to.
That would be something different. Like kill the main character in the first part of the trilogy.
Would it be different? Because I'm pretty sure it happened in the last trilogy.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure somebody spiked Han Solo in the chest with something for shits and giggles.
Han Solo wasn't the main character.
You don't.
Han Solo is a main character.
I'm not with you. We're not doing this. No, we're not going to be contrarian today. Amanda,
so,
what do you got?
Real quick, yeah. I know the intention of your question here is to expand on what we foresee the future
what do you
of
want?
Star Wars, like what we would want to see out of it. I don't have a ton of preference in terms of that. Obviously, I don't know the stories and the books and everything as detailed as you guys do. I like Star Wars for what they are, but my biggest thing is I would have really liked for them to come up with an idea and then decide to write a script versus, hey guys, we want you to write a whole nother trilogy, figure out what you want that to look like. Because that to me is Disney not learning from their lessons. That is Disney not hearing the feedback from a lot of viewers who wanted a more clear and distinct path.
They are doing that.
That was new
and fresh.
That's
what Simon Kinberg has been tasked to do, is to write episodes 10 through 12.
You're missing my point.
Sure, he was tasked to make three movies that nobody knows what the hell they're about.
Exactly. Versus, hey guys, we have this great idea of how we can build another trilogy and make it something better. It's different when you have the development inside your brains about what you have for your vision versus, hey guys, we have to make something. So we've got to make it fit in this box because we have a project that's been assigned to us. To me, that's not going to get the same love and respect that I think fans are going to be wanting from another section of the franchise. Now, if I were to just kind of, again, not knowing the Star Wars world very intimately and deeply beyond what I've seen on the screen already.
That's enough. Trust me. That's enough. Movies. I didn't read the books. I don't care about the books.
But that's the thing. You should care about the books.
Refer to Aaron
Marvel,
as that kind of
Marvel
person.
Worked for 10 years because there was content that you
could pull
out of.
Let her finish. I got it.
He does have a good point, and that's kind of what I'm referencing. Why not come up with, hey guys, we have like somewhere that we want to focus versus let's just throw something together and then you lose some of the love. Yeah, you can get brainstorming and you can get people that create a great idea. It's very possible, but I feel like there's just more love brought into it when it comes about more organically.
It would be great if Kathleen Kennedy would come up and say like, there's this guy, I'm just using him as an example here, Grand Admiral Thrawn. We're going to write a trilogy about Grand Admiral Thrawn. go? Because at least then there's an idea starting point.
Yeah, exactly. What is the vision? You have to have a complete vision. And I feel like they're still missing having those connecting points. It's still about how can we run the dollar.
And personally,
that's what the impression I take away from
and
this.
And personally, but go ahead, finish.
No. Sorry.
No. I was saying, and personally, like the Acolyte introduced a really great idea. Are the Jedi actually good? Because they may be just doing what they think is right, but it's really not right. Other people have different points of view, and maybe the witches are right, and maybe the dark side is right. Like, explore that, because that is interesting. Who is right and who is bad and who is good and who's not. Like, that is an interesting story. And then you can make up whatever freaking characters you want for three movies.
I think Simon Kinberg, just chime in real quick? Simon Kinberg was a writer on Star Wars Rebels. He did 77 episodes, it shows, on IMDb.
And Rebels is freaking great.
Oh.
Well, then maybe you should shut up and give him a chance.
Oh, he was a writer for Rebels. Oh.
Yeah. But he also wrote Fantastic Four in 2015. So I'm just saying.
Oh. Well.
We don't know where we're going to end up with this puppy. We have no idea.
So let me finish my thoughts here real quick. So just to quickly wrap up what I would think that would be cool, and it's you get glimpses and see this in I can't remember which one it is, but it is the early 2000s ones that everyone hates, and they start going into like the baby Jedis and the youth who are trying to kind of get into that world. Mm-hmm. I know they're not called baby Jedis, but whatever. I think exploring more of like a united front, a united fight that involves some of the younger generations and how it's going to evolve with them, because that's such a great evolution to get a new character as a focus point or a new segment of people as a focus point. I know it's like semi cliche, but I feel like there's very fun ways to make it not so cliche.
That's an idea. That's great.
He said it's an idea.
It is. Like, so exactly that. They're called younglings, by the way. So let's take a youngling who survived Order 66, and then he's like scorned or something. And then you explore that person's journey of how they have to like struggle with, was the Jedi abandon him? Did the Jedi cause him to have this pain? And he has to work through the pain. And then eventually he gets a redeeming arc by the third movie or something.
Yeah. It's called Rebels. Rebels did this.
And there's nothing wrong that says Rebels and Ahsoka combined couldn't become three movies, because it's freaking good.
It's got to be the future. Ahsoka is back in Return of the Jedi. I tell you what,
after Return of the Jedi. It's in the in-between period between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens.
You sound like an absolute nerd right there. It's 100% after the last movie, or before the last movie, and that's what I care about. It's got to be the next chapter. Now, I want something new. You can, if you want to bring back elements from the books, fine, but I want something new, man. I want something new. Just, I can't do another Back to the Wheelhouse.
Yeah.
We need to move on or we're never going to talk about anything else. So that's exciting news though for Star Wars fans. I tell you what I do love. I love the movies. I don't watch the TV shows. Although I kind of want to watch Skeleton Crew because Jude Law rocks, and it looks a little heisty, but we'll see what happens. All right, so what takes you out of a movie more? Elongated kissing scenes, you know, where it's sloppy and wet, and or explicit sex scenes where...
You know what takes me out of a podcast? Aaron making those noises.
Mouth noises.
You know what makes me want to take myself out of this world? Hearing it.
Which one grosses you out more?
Anything you just said.
Okay, so neither one? You don't like either one?
Sex scenes. Sex scenes that are not necessary.
Take you out of a movie more?
Yes. When they're like,
much rather watch somebody have the good old dirty deeds.
There's difference. If it's good old dirty deeds and it makes sense, like an Eyes Wide Shut or like a 50 Shades of Grey, where like sex is like the whole or Baby Girl coming up in December, like that makes sense. When it's just like, let's just go fuck around, like that just takes you out of the movie.
Easy. All right.
Oh, can we F-bomb?
No.
Because I had to hold myself back.
Let's dial it back. He got a little carried away on the bad movie night.
It wasn't a swear word. It was used in the context of how it's supposed to be used.
I
don't know.
I don't like sloppy kissings. That's what I don't like. I don't like them. And honestly,
I don't need to watch people share saliva for that long.
I don't think most actors are very good kissers, and a lot of times there will be, you know, because of comfort factors and whatnot, people don't want someone else's tongue in their mouth, so they'll just lip lock, and that just looks ridiculous because nobody kisses like that. And if you do, you're never going to stay together because you shouldn't.
Director and cinematographer's fault for not shutting up the shot right and doing it more from a
You know what, back. Troy? I was just going to say, you want to know the thing that irritates me the most about kissing scenes is when they fake the kiss, like you're just now saying. When they've got, you know, they're coming from a backward corner angle and they're creeping up over the shoulder so you can't even see their freaking lips touching and you're just supposed to pretend that their faces are sitting there moving around. I cannot mentally get past the thought of two human beings fake kissing. It makes me so much more uncomfortable than making out scenes and definitely more uncomfortable than
screwing scenes. Try it on a mannequin during the COVID years.
What just happened here?
I'm sorry. Yeah. I think I have to go.
Specifically, I'm saying they had to use mannequins to do kissing scenes during the COVID year.
Okay.
Oh, God. Thank you for clarifying. I don't know how true that is. None of us thought that was, yeah.
I don't know how true that is. But
you,
I
you
don't
know that's true because we did a podcast on a TV show where they did it.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. But I just don't like sloppy kissing. It looks like two pickles rubbing on each other with all those tongues, and I just can't do it. I don't want any part of it.
Two pickles?
Yeah, because it's all wet and slobbery. You ever seen a wet pickle and seen another wet pickle like cross the swords? That's just, no, I can't do it.
Mm-mm. What is happening right now?
Just to clarify for your mental imagery,
he must be talking about like sliced pickles because they're not wet, just always naturally on the outside.
When you take them out of the jar, they're
pickle juice.
When they're all juiced up and looks like a slobbery, I don't even know why I'm on his side right now.
this was so you're talking about
sandwich pickles, not spears and not holes.
Just go ahead, John.
Jesus.
Go ahead, John, what do you got?
I don't know how I feel about the sloppy kissing and or the sex. Either one of them, as long as they fit into the story, I'm mostly okay with it. It doesn't really affect me. But the thing that I've picked up on a lot lately is that I've grown to love the smaller signs of affections between couples in movies and television shows, like the side eye, the fact that those two characters develop their own language and it starts to look very real on screen.
Oh, like or affairs. Even like the I got it,
huh?
Like affairs, I got it. Like where how you doing? And they can't really do anything about it, like that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like
yeah, no, flirting? we're not going down this rabbit hole. However, there's those moments where like the body language totally looks like they're into each other, where there's that slight touch of the shoulder or the slight touch of the hand. Those small moments I've grown to appreciate so much more because they seem very real and they feel like it gives more depth to those characters in the story. I think the kissing and all that doesn't necessarily do it, but if it's part of the story, it makes sense. If it's like a salacious thing or if it's something that's supposed to draw an emotion out of the viewer, I can totally buy into it. I'm okay with it, but I love those sweet little moments between two people.
Would you like
you
more?
Fucking sappy romantic, you're so cute.
Shut the fuck up. I am not.
No, I promise I won't say another bad word.
He just wants the head to like fall on the shoulder kind of thing, you know.
He wants the gentle, sweet nothings, the little sweet nothings, or whatever it's called.
Would you like a sweet gesture if it was a wet pickle on your shoulder?
And it ain't no pickle.
They have these as gifts.
Moving on. Why didn't Rick Grimes just take everybody back to the hospital when he found them? He was safe there for like a month.
Oh my God, I have PTSD from this show.
We could skip it, but I'm just curious. Does anyone have a theory on this?
You know what? Here's my theory about it. Rick was already kind of dazed from waking up in this bullshit world. And then he's like kind of living with what's his face at the house. He didn't even take what's his face back to the house, back to the hospital with him when he found him. And when he finally found everybody, like their whole world is kind of screwed up. I'm surprised he remembered how to tie his own shoes.
He's also safe in the hospital because nothing got into the hospital. The minute he leaves the hospital's no longer safe.
Mm.
And the distance he had to travel to actually find, was it Glenn, I think he finds first by the tank?
Yeah, it was Glenn. Yep.
Wow, that is a long time ago for me to be able to remember that.
Wasn't it? It was a while.
So the fact that he finds Glenn, like, is he going to, like, now he's got to go back where he came from, where everything was, like, trying to hunt him down? Like, he's not getting back to the hospital in one piece.
All right, fine. So superhero movies, okay, aside from the flukes like Deadpool and Wolverine, do you think they ever reclaim their previous popularity? And I mean, like, you know, the 10 years we have where we ended with Endgame and it was just wild how insanely popular all that stuff was. Do you think we ever get back to that level with superhero movies specifically? Or do we move on to another genre?
I think it's time for them to remember how to get back to their roots, smaller budgets, simpler stories, things that are able to not only appeal to the comic book fan, but also to the person who's not a comic book fan.
There you go.
That was what was great about comic book movies when they initially came out, because they were still so grounded that the person who doesn't have that ability to pack away their ability to suspend our disbelief, that person was able to enjoy the movie enough to get into it. And then by the time that everything was cool and big and grandiose, they didn't care anymore because they were there just as happy as everybody else was. It wasn't until they derailed things by doing the multiverse, and they started taking advantage of people's love for characters, and they started really taking away from their ability to keep themselves to a better standard of storytelling. But also there's also the outside things from the movies themselves, which is, to me, it happens in comics. It really does. There are people who love DC. There's people who love Marvel, and those people hate each other. It does happen in comics, but I hate seeing it in movies and television and all that, because it really just kills the experience for everybody when they start doing that. And so,
well, that's more fandom than it is the movie,
right? I mean, I'm just saying, if like fandom is what ruined,
can't control fandom. Studios can't control fandom.
Studios can't control that. But I'm just going all around the table as far as what needs to be done. I'm done talking now.
Superhero movies are interesting because any movie getting made has to hit the four quadrants in order for it to be a big success. And because the superhero movies have giant budgets, like, that four quadrant cannot get missed in any way, shape, or form. And I think what happened after Endgame was that we ran out of superheroes that people knew really well. And so we had to start tapping into other superheroes that some people knew. So now we go away from that four quadrant being filled up. Ooh. Because you're targeting specific audience members that really care about that character. But the general audience is like, who the hell is Shang-Chi, right? What the hell are the Eternals? Like, those are things that people don't resonate with. So you lose that four quadrant box. Therefore, you lose the dollars. Therefore, you can't make $200, $300 billion movies.
I need to back you up a little bit. Before the Marvel movies started happening, no one gave a shit about Iron Man. No one cared about Captain America. True. No one cared.
Cast people that people cared about. That's the difference.
That's the opposite.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Robert Downey Jr. was a dead celebrity in terms of Hollywood.
Like,
Chris Evans was not a bankable actor in any way, shape, or form. They brought those characters to life.
Yeah. It wasn't until and the reason why, and if we remember, the reason why they had to use those characters specifically, as far as starting the Avengers, is because they're big, Marvel's biggest ticket items, Spider-Man and the X-Men and Fantastic Four, were owned by other studios.
And Blade. Blade was a big hit at that point.
I'm sorry. And Blade 2. So because they couldn't work with those, they had to do what they can to develop a whole story based off these characters that people didn't have the same kind of love for anymore. Sure, there were your diehards that loved some of those characters, but they weren't as popular as any of the X-Men or even Spider-Man, because the X-Men and Spider-Man had cartoons ever since the 90s that the rest of the characters didn't really have the same kind of grounding in. So
yeah, they can create new characters. I mean, Thunderbolts look like it'll connect with people, and you just got to connect to people.
Yeah.
With whatever the new character is, or lesser known characters are.
Yeah. Ant-Man was a lesser known character that people weren't that popular. That wasn't that big of a deal, but they made Ant-Man work.
Because it was Paul Rudd.
Because of the character.
Well, you're sounding so sure of yourself, and you're just like, I don't even think you're sure.
I don't think Ant-Man works if it's not Paul Rudd.
Well, most movies don't work if it's not cast well.
That's what I'm saying. The lesser known characters were cast with people that people knew.
That's not what you were saying.
Yeah,
that's not what you were saying.
Like, Robert Downey Jr. might have been a down and out actor at the time when he got cast, but people know the name Robert Downey Jr. People know the name.
That's not why it worked.
Robert Downey Jr. was not even a leading man at that point. Like, yeah, he was like a supporting actor at best. He did a couple roles that got him noticed for sure. But he was on the brink of being cast out of Hollywood. They couldn't even insure his ass.
Yeah, like, he was kryptonite for a little while.
He was kryptonite.
It was a big deal. Like when Favreau said it had to be him, he had to like sell a testicle to get to make it work.
Okay, that part's an exaggeration. There were no testicles exchanged. That I'm aware.
There were 3,000 testicles exchanged.
Can I share my theory real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
So I think because
I don't want to hear it.
I think it was mostly about timing. So in the 80s to 90s is when you had your peak of comic book sales and when people were most invested in them. Typically, they were, you know, youth going into teenage years. And then it started as it continued progressing. It really got into different generations and started to kind of bleed out as something to kind of understand and dive into a bit further. As those people who are most connected to comic books in the 80s and 90s are in their adulthood and their kids are now being able to potentially be exposed to some of that stuff too, it's a great bonding mechanism. It taps into your childhood and nostalgia. It taps into, I think Troy does have a good point that there's the characters that they chose themselves are some of the most notable characters in the comic books.
They're not.
And so
the Hulk
in the comic
Spider-Man,
books,
Captain America.
Those Captain America, Spider-Man Iron Man, they were not big. Black Panther wasn't that big. Like these are
anybody that followed comic books know Captain America and
Captain
Marvel.
No, you know
Marvel
who they are,
Superman,
sure, but they're not
that big. Yes,
they
that's the whole point.
Iron Man was not popular in any way, shape, or form. Iron Man was not that popular.
Nobody's
okay.
Popular or not, people knew the name Iron Man. They knew of Iron Man. They didn't know Shang-Chi.
They knew about as much as they did about Tony Stark. So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Amanda. I didn't mean to cut you.
I think there was a lot
That's not true. I didn't mean to cut you.
We've
off.
Taken this. There was a lot of taking this throughout those years, being able to connect different generations that had already started to evolve into other generations. Now you're taking those childhood imagery pieces, putting it to screen for those that did invest in comic books. And whether they knew the character or not, it's still seeing the people that did know those characters and went to go see it had a great experience with it. The people that did go and didn't know the characters then became fans of it. So you're connecting with both elements of the audience on top of multi-generations. And that's when it really had its height. I think that there's a potential for it to return, but you'd somehow have to find really new ways to connect characters to people nowadays that are different and unique from all the characters we've seen up to this point, and also not reiterate the same stories or feel like everything's redundant. So it's a much bigger challenge now at this point, especially because people are getting superhero fatigue. And it's not, I don't think, because people are tired of superheroes. I think it's because people are tired of the mediocrity within superhero movies. And if you can bypass the hump of the very average slope of it, if you can intentionally invest your time, your money, and your efforts into value-added characters and value-added stories that have something unique or fun about them, people will get interested in it again. They're not lost on superheroes. People still buy superhero shit. They're still going to watch the Penguin, even though we're talking like DC specifically there. Like, people are going to stay involved in those, but you have to make good stuff. And when you had your height of films around really great characters, whether you knew them in the beginning or not, you grew to love them and you spent 10 years with them. Good luck finding that same magic in a bottle again. I think it's going to be incredibly difficult to get that same level of interest in superhero movies in particular. And I think you'll have a great time if you could start to, I don't know, patiently wait them out and just go back to spending time where, okay, nobody knows these characters. Nobody knows these actors. We've got to make one hell of a movie versus everybody knows these characters. Everybody knows the story. They're going to come and buy it anyway.
And I like your timing theory because I also think the thing that sells the most is conflict, war, right? Like war is happening right now. The battle between red versus blue, war sells entertainment eyeballs. And the fact that DC and Marvel were both firing at the same time, and you're getting this battle of is DC better, is Marvel better, and all of that noise was also fueling the engine of the cash. I think that was something that also helped. And then when DC started to falter, you also saw Marvel start to falter at the same time.
Yeah, it was a competitive landscape too. Like you...
They never really got to Marvel numbers, but semi-competitive.
No, but you had... When it comes to the audience, it's all competition. It's my fan base versus your fan base, my content versus your content, depending on which side you end up on. And Troy has a great point too.
Your grandma sitting by the fire.
It sounds like we're getting ready for our Christmas episode.
All right, so let's move on to something else. So Ryan Reynolds recently said that Eddie Murphy was criminally robbed of an Oscar for his performances in Nutty Professor and Clumps. And I get what he's saying. He's saying because, you know, unlike, you know, Peter Sellers, who basically just played the same version of himself over and over, like Eddie Murphy was playing completely different characters. And that's very unappreciated, especially by the Oscars. So I know we've kind of talked on this before, but are the Oscars just flat out snobs? Like, because they don't really consider much outside of those dramas that we're so used to. And here's what I'll say. So I had this thought while I was watching Heretic, which we're going to talk about soon, right? This is a movie that takes, I thought more after that movie was over than I have any movie in a long time. And it's not my favorite movie of the year. That would be My Dead Friend Zoe. Trailer's out soon.
Movie of next year. Because it hasn't totally released.
Well, trailer's out now.
Cheap plug because Aaron got his own nice little plug in the trailer.
Yeah, they used my quote. Goes look at it. Yeah, Hollywood Outsider right there. Bam.
Good job.
Thanks.
And it's the last quote in the quote sequence. It is. So it's the one that people remember.
It's a great screenshot too. I'm actually going to print that.
It's great. That's fits right on top of the folded flag. Oh, it's beautiful. Have
a tattooed on his butt.
So what was
right
I even
next
talking
to the
about?
Other ones?
Oh, anyway, so I'm. You know what? That's a horror movie, right? And I think it'll probably be kind of cast to the wind by the time Oscars roll around because they don't really put too much stock in horror movies. Silence of the Lambs is a very rare exception, and I would not even call that a horror movie. So even though some do. But man, do I think they just are complete snobs to genres. I think they're absolute snobs, and they're kind of assholes to people that work in genres. I think comedy is extremely hard. Comedians are very rarely rewarded. You have horror and science fiction and those kind of genres that are taking really, really, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of dumb shit like Time Cut on Netflix, but there's a lot of like really interesting, insightful science fiction and horror and other genres that are just out there for the world to see that are really thought provoking. And it bugs me to no end that hasn't changed in all the years. It's still the heaviest drama, the loftiest goals that someone has to overcome, blah, 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 blah. But something like Heretic, which is a very small movie that is going to make people think and actually found a way to make talking about religion entertaining, which is very hard to do, and made it work. Like stuff like that, we should be rewarding. Things that really, really provoke conversation among fandom, not just infighting. Am I out of line here?
If he was snubbed for Nutty Professor and the Clumps, he technically was snubbed for Coming to America because he played multiple characters in Coming in America.
I would argue he should have been nominated for some of those, for sure.
Agree.
But I'm speaking in broad terms.
I think it is one of the downfalls of the Academy, and it's something that's been highlighted over recent years as well, is that they don't have a diverse enough palette when it comes to who they're going to award. You already know, and it's the ironic part is there are literally games out there for the Academy Awards where people will try to guess who the winners will be. And I feel like the fact that so many people can get above 95% is probably not a good symbol of your diversity when it comes to the content that you're awarding.
And you're talking about genre diversity.
They probably
right?
also fill out their ballot after all of the other award shows had happened, so they kind of have an inside track with information.
No,
that too.
No, they're just, I can every year I call almost all the winners. So that's what she's saying is very true. It's very easy to determine what's going to happen. They're
it
very
is,
predictable.
And it's because they do not go outside of that comfortability that they're used to. And it silos a lot of actors, directors, screenwriters, production members, like who do hair and makeup styling, all those different things that now they have a miss for. And I think Aaron has a really good point when it comes to this movie in particular, but a lot of different films where they've had such a significant impact on society or pop culture, or just have been somehow commended by all of their peers as to the challenges and tribulations of achieving that. But if you're not completely transforming who you are as a person, and going through a significant plight as a character, or I don't know, living in a period piece, then you're probably not going to get your nomination. And to me, that's very disappointing. And I think people are watching the shows less and less because they feel that they don't feel like the most impactful performance is truly awarded.
I mean, technically by Academy standards, you only are awarding art, right? And in that case, then here should probably get a nomination because it's the first time we've had a movie where the main character is a place, not a person.
What?
Like, what I'm saying
is going to be great. It has to be great. I mean
it was, but I mean, some of these Academy movies, like, they're good. Like, 10 best pictures. Not all 10 of those movies were good.
Well, that all depends on your
point of view, criteria, right?
Your point of view. Yeah.
Yeah.
By their account, all of them would have been great to be eligible. But yeah, they definitely have a diversity problem. And you know, I think when you say the word diversity, people jump to, well, they need more people of color. They need more people. And I get all of that. I do not subscribe to that theory. It should always be the best nominees across the board, whoever they may be. But I do think diversity of genre is very important because I am sick to death of it only being dramas, and it's not, you're not taking comedies, horror, science fiction into real account. It's just so, and when they do, it's like, look, we threw you a bone. You know, it's like, we should be just thankful. Look, the Joker won. You should be thankful for that. Shut up.
Just, which is why the 10 best pictures is stupid. Go back to 5.
I really, don't get me wrong, I love watching the Academy Awards. The Oscars are a part of my life. But if I would be remiss if I didn't say that they are extremely, what's the word, pretentious.
Mm. Yeah.
You just realizing
when it comes
now?
To the words. No, not at all. But I just can't be naive in actually saying that out loud. I feel like it has to be acknowledged that, yes, I'm not a hypocrite. I do watch the Oscars, but I also recognize they have some faults. So I hope that it improves and they seem to be more open to accepting feedback, kind of, because they've been making changes over the last few years to try to probably up the numbers because they've been declining.
That's a big reason why. But you're only doing things that 9 people have seen half the time.
And you're awarding the same people year after year. They're doing the same type of roles year after year.
About the Oscars, not the Emmys.
Right.
Well, it happens to both.
The Emmys are even worse.
The Emmys are way worse. Yeah. You'll have the same show that's nominated and wins 25 seasons in a row.
I don't even consider that a real awards show. Like, that's why we don't even cover it anymore. I don't even care.
No, everybody's drunk at the awards show. It's just an entertainment show.
All right, Troy. Let's, those were some of mine. So, Troy, you get to throw one out here. What do you got?
What's the mine is, should there be a max length for trailers before the movie starts, and should people be let in after the movie starts?
I wish trailers were a little before the movie starts. Yeah,
total runtime.
I think it should be 10 minutes. I think that's 5 trailers. They should be capped at like 2 minutes. They're gonna stay at 2.5 minutes, so which are most trailers are 2.5 minutes long, if you didn't know.
Three of them are good.
I'm good with 10 minutes, so 4. 10 minutes. And should they be let in after it starts? Or before? I think...
Hitchcock would say no.
Well, Hitchcock, yeah. Well, that was a different time.
Yeah.
Look, with families and everything else, yeah, I think that's an audience problem. It's not great, but it's an audience problem. It's not the theater's problem. I can't imagine them trying to police that, so...
It would not be easy because some people do, like, they don't care that they're missing half of the movie. They're just trying to, you know, get out of the snow, or they've been shopping all day and so they just want somewhere to go and sit down and enjoy whatever it is. And so the movies or the theater's not likely to just turn away that money. But they do typically have like some level of cutoffs for like buying tickets online and stuff like that. So they find ways to kind of curb it. and it's not as significant in terms of like last minute purchases. But if somebody has already bought the tickets, I mean, are you really going to refund them because they're late?
You're not going to block them.
As long as they're not being disruptive.
You're not going to block them. Literally, I just went and saw a red one, and there was a family. Now, keep in mind, there's 20 minutes of previews before it started, 25, something like that. So,
you got to be hella late.
There was a family of five, two parents, three kids, showed up 15 minutes after the movie started. So that's 35 minutes
15
late.
Or 50?
15. 15. So we're talking like 35 to 40 minutes late. I'm like, what are you doing? It's your money. I mean, if you want to waste it, it's your money. That's what I say.
I agree on trailer limitations, though. I think that it's really needs crazy. To be a thing.
And that includes Nicole Kidman. Get Nicole Kidman. We already talked about that 100 times. But
which is why I said three, because Nicole and the other stuff is still there.
It's the other problem I have is that it's so inconsistent. Like trailers are sometimes 17 minutes here. Sometimes they're 23 minutes there. And I'm like, can we just get a set parameter? Because I am somebody who procrastinates and I really like to toe the line. But sometimes you're making me too early and sometimes you're making me too late.
Or
so,
you could just not
procrastinate. Or just be on time. Yeah, I know. It's also just driving my idea further is really, it's just another way to try to boost that.
I mean,
the
studio or the theaters do tell you there'll be about 20 minutes of previews. That's on the website. It's on every website.
But it's not 20 minutes.
No.
Sometimes it's 25. Sometimes it's
It's not going to be perfect 16. No matter what. Yeah, unless they start it right on the button when the show starts.
I think you're trying to split a hair here that doesn't need to be split.
I'm talking a 10-minute variation feels pretty significant.
Do you know how time works? Because I am not convinced.
No, she does not. No.
Ay.
I love how
I have no retort for this.
Like, you know, I mean, I get where you're coming from. Can we have some sort of consistency? But if you really were that concerned with time, as far as how much time you have to go one place or the other.
I'm not.
I know. That's why I said if.
All right, okay? John, it's your turn. What do you got?
Did social media improve or damage celebrity culture? How did platforms like Twitter and Instagram change celebrity dynamics to you guys? What do you guys think? I think social media has really tanked a lot of people's value and worth because we have way too much access.
I've never been a fan of celebrity to begin with. I think it's so overrated and overvalued. I like the content. I like the product. I don't care what someone does in their personal life. It doesn't impress me in any way, shape, or form. Social media has done more to damage that than anything because everybody wanted to be a celebrity decades ago. Now everybody thinks they are. So it's exhausting. That's what I would say about it. And the plus side, it has diluted it because there aren't really movie stars anymore. So now we can get a lot of actors work.
Yeah. Anybody else?
I think it changed celebrity dynamics in the way that fans and celebrities interact with each other. And it actually makes it probably worse in some regard because most online conversation is definitely more keyboard warrior than it is actual like real people that would come to like a Comic-Con to get their thing signed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely think it has definitely changed the dynamics, and I think it's made celebrities probably more weary. So you don't see probably as many coming, big name celebrities anyway, coming to things like Comic-Con to sign stuff. You'll get your B-list or up-and-coming or just breaking out type actors doing the marketing press tour for that, but then you'll see them disappear after that.
I think at first social media it turned into a really cool way for people to engage, regular everyday Joes engaging with celebrities. They could get a Twitter message back. They could get a shout out. They could get all of these different quick lines of communication to their favorite celebrities. And since then, it has turned into not this coveted appreciation that, hey, I have kind of a connection to a celebrity. It is now I can just destroy them as much as possible, put rumors out there. I can do all of these things that will hurt them. In addition, I think because it's so accessible to get to a celebrity now, you've kind of diminished, I guess, the value of being a celebrity because celebrities were hard to connect with. They were hard to reach. You had to have reporters and stuff mm-hmm. flock around their house just to get pictures of them and stuff. They still do that, but now we all can do the same thing. We can see all the stuff real time. We can see somebody do a live stream. We can tell our celebrities off if we're not a fan of them. Like all of that.
We can cancel them if we really want to.
Literally, all of that instant access, I think, has expanded on entitlement. And I think it has taken celebrities out of that next level kind of coveted pocket that they used to be in. For better or for worse, that's probably subjective, because I think for people, regular everyday people, it's probably more beneficial. It's probably more ideal. Mm-hmm. But for celebrities themselves, now everything's always at risk. Your mental health, good luck. Because the thing is, and everybody has to learn this lesson in life, you will never get everyone to like you. Someone out there inevitably does not like you, and you might not have even ever met or talked. They might have just seen you or heard about you. But the point is that you're never going to be able to make everybody happy. And when you have constant access to hearing people being dissatisfied with not just you, your appearance, your body, your weight, you know, what you look like, how you talk, how your lips move, but also who you are as a person, who you are as an actor in your work. Literally, I've judged people for how their lips move. That's a personal one here. I'm like, your lips look weird. But it's because you're constantly evaluating and assessing them and passing judgments elsewhere. And you're giving them those judgments in real time that they can see. There's been a huge uptick of celebrities taking themselves off social media because of that, because people have gotten very vile and evil and just super gross in terms of how they treat people. And it's not just celebrities, it's everyone. Mm-hmm. But, say, Levy,
yeah.
I think that celebrity culture is very different, yes.
Nice. All right, I'm going to go ahead and move on to my next question. So, adaptations, it's something that we always get. It's something that we love or appreciate. But should adaptations stay true to the source material, or can they be modernized for contemporary audiences?
Don't care. Make a good movie or a good TV show. I'm tired of that battle. I think that battle's gotten exhausted. I think you should try to be as faithful as you can, but if you can make something better in a different time period or fine. Uncharted, I really enjoyed Uncharted, and that is nothing like the games. I would have rather, going into it, have had the game that I played, but when I watched the movie, I'm like, this is really fun. I enjoy it. I would watch this again, so I have no problem with it. So as far as I'm concerned, just make a great movie or TV show, and I think all will be well. Fallout is another great. That's not really taken from the game. That's spun off of, that's like new material connected to the game. And I think it's great. So, nope, doesn't have to be faithful. Just has to respect the love of it has to be respectful of the original content.
I think it has to honor the medium that it's being used to tell the story. If you're going to tell a story that was written for a book, like, you can do things in a book that you can't do on a screen. So you got to make the changes in order to make the thing work on the screen. 11/22/63. It's a fantastic book. It's really great. And the 8-episode miniseries on Hulu was also pretty darn great. And it changed a whole bunch of stuff. And it took a bunch of stuff out of order. And it was fine because the essence of the story was still there at the end of the day. But they had to leverage things for TV that were different. And so, yeah, it's totally fine to make a change to an adaptation. Just stay truthful to the concept that's being told, but tell it in whatever way makes sense for the medium you're using.
For me, adaptations, in addition to everything you guys said, I think also need to take into consideration what the source material actually is, the content, because that makes a big difference. If you're telling a fictional story that was like a novel that was written some, you know, 100 years ago or whatever, cool. Go ahead and modernize it, change it, make it different. If you're going to tell the story from, you know, let's say, even if it is a novel or something, but it's about a real situation or real circumstances, and you're trying to depict that, then I think you need to try to stay true to what that content is. Does that make sense?
Yep. I think it's similar to what Troy said.
All right. That's great. But Amanda's
your turn. Better?
Yeah. Go ahead, Amanda.
Okay. So I have a couple here for you guys. All right. My first one is, what constitutes a proper vampire for you? So what rules must always exist? And then do you have any favorite written or visual examples of your favorite fiends?
Rules.
But I think the debate that I hear sometimes is when people watch a horror movie with vampires, it's do they have to get invited into the house?
Call these off and we'll just like go through them. Come on, let's just make this easy.
Okay.
Yes. I say yes.
Can they sparkle?
Wait, hang on. These dickheads didn't. Wait, back to the, do they have to be invited? I say yes. What do you guys say?
Yes.
I say yes. Okay. I say yes, absolutely.
That's a cool rule. So that one's covered. Yes.
Can they sparkle?
No.
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 I mean, I have to ask.
They can sparkle. They don't have to sparkle.
No, they shouldn't sparkle. Duller the better. I want my dark vampires.
Does garlic fend them off? Fend them off. Not fend them off. Fend them off.
Yeah. I'm indifferent. Yes. I'm indifferent.
Crosses.
Yes.
Fending them off.
Yes. But you got to have faith for that to work. On
you
me.
Gotta have faith. Mm. Faith to faith.
No, dipshit. It's from Fright Night.
I know. I'm.
He was in a singing mood today. I guess.
Yeah.
No reflection in right. no reflection in the mirror.
Yeah.
But I do think George Michael would ward them off too.
Yeah.
Probably. That no. Troy brought off. Up a good one. Reflections in mirrors.
You know, that's a great definitely. Giveaway. Got to have a giveaway, right? Got to have a way to tell.
Mm-hmm. 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 What about how someone can be turned into a vampire?
Stakes.
Just bit by them, right? And then they turn.
Oh, well, turned into a vampire.
Do they turned into a vampire? Do they eat a steak. Just that's have what to I meant. Get do they have to get sucked on, or do they also have to do the sucking?
Oh,
I think they have to get sucked on and then suck off. I think that is a
I think you have to take two pickles.
Wow. No.
That was a great return.
One of them is a spear. The other one is a dill.
Yeah. Rum together, you're a vampire. I like the way that when you have to have it both ways.
And you know what? So it's a very, like, historically, gothic horrors and vampires are very sexually explicit, and it was intended to be that way. And it was intended to give off that sexual nature of biting into someone, taking what is keeping them alive, sucking it in, and then also doing the same thing.
Yeah, you know, in reverse. I like it's that version better. So if it's my rules, then I would say yes. It's got to be both ways.
Yeah, I'm a suck on, suck off kind of guy.
Okay, Troy?
I don't know. I think if they're bit and they're marked, then you have to like actually do the sexy time to make them actually turn.
Does their body disintegrate when they are killed?
Wait, they gotta explode. They gotta go boom. Yeah,
I like the explode go boom. I want to add a little bit more to this suck on suck off thing. Like
don't make it weird.
The reason why I think it has to be that way, right? Is because let's say like in the advent that a vampire takes on a Renfield, so it's not someone they want to turn into another vampire, but somebody that they feed on, but uses a servant. So sure, they use that person as a backup blood bag every now and again when they need some blood, but they have to keep that person around for as long as possible. So how do you do that? Well, if you keep feeding me, eventually I'll let you suck me off and then you'll be a vampire too.
Better phrasing, but I got where you're going with this.
Yeah. Words. Yeah. Are there any rules that I didn't cover that you guys are like adamant needs to be in there?
I find fascinating is there's a lot of rules. Like somebody at some point was just writing all kinds of random shit down. Like,
the vampire commandments.
I think different sunlight. You didn't touch on sunlight. The sunlight.
Yeah. Oh, duh. Yeah, obviously. Can they survive in sunlight?
I say yes. I don't like, I think sunlight, I prefer when sunlight weakens them, not kills them. Weakens them so they can be killed.
I like that.
I think they're more like a Mogwai, that they can't be in the direct sunlight outside, but like they could be awake during the daytime. And like,
yeah,
sun's
I like
coming
the slow burn of it. Like if they spent a good 10 minutes, maybe they burst into flames, but you know, they can do a minute max.
They can run out and get the groceries.
They've got a timer.
Yeah.
They could chase after their succubus down the driveway.
Yeah, they got to do like basic chores. I mean, it's not really cool. If they can never mow the lawn until midnight, they're just a dickhead neighbor.
What do you guys feel about the bat transformation?
I was just gonna ask that.
I don't like that one. I think that's ridiculous. Weird. I mean, in Fright Night, it's great, but outside of that, it's ridiculous.
I like the idea of transformation, but not necessarily the bat, unless we're talking like What We Do in the Shadows, a TV show, when Laszlo has to say bat every time he wants to transform into a bat. But I like the idea of transformation. I think it, there was a, I think
like shape-shifting vampires.
Yeah, I like the, like being able to change into a giant black wolf. Like that, I can get behind.
Well, then you'd be confused because I don't know if I'm bringing garlic or silver bullets.
Yeah,
no, it's not a werewolf, but there are stories.
I only have so many pockets, dude. Like, to bring all this shit. Holy water.
I'm for that.
We talked on that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. I think that's it. I don't know if there's any more rules. I'm sure there's one big one we're missing. Someone's yelling at the radio.
If you kill the master vampire, does it kill all other vampires?
Yes. I love that. That's how you save your friends. Otherwise, all your friends are dead too. That sucks.
Mm-hmm. Mind control and hypnosis. What do we think about that?
Only if it's the lead vampire. I think
they have to have a level of influence and charisma because that's how they can lure people in. I think about it as manipulation as well. And I think there has to be some level of it.
Like the mind control and hypnosis, I don't get behind, but I do get behind the charisma. Like I do get, I like the somebody who's so charismatic,
so charming. Go kill someone for me, sure.
Yeah,
dude.
I can get behind that. It happens all the time. Hello,
that's a hell of a charm.
That is actually true. Yeah. That does happen.
I don't. Well, I guess cult leaders. Okay.
Yeah.
That and also, you know, crazy people in love.
That's quite They'll crazy. Do wild
things. You see, Aaron, when there are two pickles and both of them are shafts.
Oh my God, he did not just say the word shafts on the podcast.
Even just. Always have to go explicit past where the line was. Just because.
What line? Okay. Was there a line? Oh, it's way back there.
What else you got, Amanda?
So my other one is kind of related to Heretic. You kind of brought up the lingering concepts that sit with you of did this happen? Did this not happen? How do we feel about it? And the kind of like lack of confirmation in the world, at least initially, where people are now debating it at the water cooler, if you will. So did the top stop spinning and fall at the end of Inception?
I'm trying to remember.
What happened?
I think, yes, I think it fell. It's reality. It's because I want it to be that way. That's the thing about that ending. I think it gives you the opportunity to choose your own adventure. And that's what I choose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Troy?
I don't have an opinion.
Really?
When has this ever happened?
Yeah, I'm just going to write this down.
You okay?
You're too busy in like,
can somebody
in
my do journal? A wellness check?
Are you on a personal text-a-thon? Is that what's going on over there? And you're like, I'm just too busy. I just don't have an opinion.
Just don't have an opinion.
All right.
I'm going to write it down on my unicorn journal that right now Troy doesn't have an opinion.
With your flower fuzzy pen.
Exactly. I want to say that the top stayed up.
Oh.
Because it's too fine of a button for the ending and it just does, it's just too pretty of an ending for it to fall. You know, it has to stay up for it to be a shit ending, and I prefer the shit ending.
Jeez. Okay.
That's fair.
It took a turn.
I think it did fall. I'm one of those people that spent too much time rewatching the end to hear if I heard the top fall. Because right after you got out of the theater, if you didn't hear it, people were bringing it up. They're like, did you hear it? Did you not hear it? Whatever.
It's that way too.
Yeah, for sure. Do you guys like having those open ended?
Yes. And that's endings? And that's why I don't have an opinion. Because the minute...
Why didn't you say that?
Because the minute...
What a great conversation topic.
Because the minute you give an opinion...
He had to take the time to recover from the fact that we caught him texting.
No.
He's sending dick pics.
Exactly. No, I want to leave it at that. Like, I don't have an opinion because the minute you have an opinion, then you take a side and it takes away from the art form. It is a perfectly good way to end that movie because it keeps the conversation going. So I don't.
Yeah, but you can only have a conversation if people.
Yeah,
have
I don't know if I believe you on this one.
I don't have an opinion because I usually let the other person speak first, and then ask questions like, why do you think that way? Why do you, like, what did you see in the movie that led you to believe that? And it opens up a dialogue.
Well, we just had that. So what did you think?
Can you open up the dialogue? What are your questions?
My point of view on it is that if it falls over, then great. He's back home. Everybody happy ever after. If it doesn't fall over, great. Then he's just as fucked up as we always thought he was. You know, both endings are good. That's why I don't have an opinion on it. I don't want it solved.
Okay.
I like how the character is written so well that either scenario still makes the movie work.
That is true. Either way, the movie does still work.
I agree with that. That's what makes ambiguous endings work. All right. So we're going to take a little bit of a break. We're going to do some reviews, and then we'll come back with some speed round on some discussion topics. But before we get there, Patreon is how our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. If you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. You get treated to bonus content varying per month. We have a new bad movie night that's coming out very soon on the movie Trap, and it is lively, is all I will say about that. It's very lively. Now we're going to go into some reviews, and we're going to start with Heretic, and that's what Amanda and I both saw. Ooh. So this one... This stars Sophie Thatcher and Chloe East as sisters Barnes and Paxton. They're two Mormon missionaries conducting their daily duties, spreading the words of Joseph Smith and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And these young women, the film opens with very random discussions on inappropriate topics, while also kind of showcasing that the struggles that people of faith endure. So as they go through their list of people that have requested additional information, the last stop that they have is that Hugh Grant's Mr. Reed. He is the film's titular heretic. He's absolutely fascinated by the concept of religion, but not so much that he actually ascribes to one. So he becomes very engaged in a quid pro quo on ideology, philosophy, theology, and Barnes, a very street savvy and naturally suspicious sister, and Paxton, who's very naive and relaxed, they quickly sense that things are amiss because Mr. Reed's wife, who's required to be present for the ladies to even be inside the home, never arrives with her promised prize of a blueberry pie. And from that point forward, the film escalates into this chess match of religious dissection before really hitting the gas and moving into different elements of horror. This is very much a horror thriller, if you will. Now, a large portion of this film revolves around the conversation of religion, various religions, what religion means, the popularism of religion, how religion became, going from Judaism, how kind of the equating it to board games and music and a lot of other avenues. But it's the whole movie is focused on what is religion and when should you believe it. Amanda, I've already talked about how much I love the idea that this was a conversation starter, really sparked a really interesting conversation after the theater and with other people that have seen the movie, yourself included. Did you like that aspect of it, or am I overselling it?
No, I love it. I love that there's a challenge to question every piece of the framework. I really, really enjoyed the performances in this film. I can't speak highly enough about, honestly, all of them. And when you talk about the conversations around religion, I think we can't overlook the fact for some people who aren't maybe a fan of heavy dialogue, there are some very tense scenes that are built with extended dialogue. So you might be sitting there and it might not seem like there's a lot of visual horror, but it's a lot of the psychological tension and where is this going to go and where is this going to end up? And specifically to how they talk about religion, I think it's almost perfectly balanced. Now, when I say almost, because I think there could have been more opportunity for our lead heroines, if you will, to talk more about why they believe, what they've experienced, and really shine the other light and perspective, since you have such heavy perspective from Hugh Grant's character, Mr. Reed. And he's really shaping every scene every interaction and the entire future of that movie as you progress along is being crafted by him in some shape or form. So I think it would have been nice to integrate a bit more of the other side and I guess the defense of religion, just so that way it felt more balanced. But the challenged questions that he brings up are valid. They are things that I've sat with myself, that I've had to contemplate over years and determine where I'm going to lay on those, because, you know, there are some things that you just can't debate. And so do you bypass that evidence and maintain your faith? Or is it something where you're like, well, I have enough here to at least disprove a piece, so it disproves the entire theory, you know? And I think that's where people have to kind of continue to battle through this movie if you are unsure of where you stand. And I think it'll make a lot of people uncomfortable based on where they do stand.
Absolutely. And I'm with you 100% on the performances. I thought you have Sophie Thatcher and Chloe East. They play the sisters, and I think they do a very, very, very strong job, because both of them have different facets of their personality that they're kind of masking throughout the movie, and you see layers of it as it unfolds. And they do a very, very strong job. But Hugh Grant in particular, I will say, in a career of, and this, I said this in my review, in a career of exceptional performances, this is probably one of his best roles. I would put this in the top five. I think Hugh Grant is phenomenal in this, and it takes somebody with his level of skill to really keep you enamored, because you do keep guessing the whole way. How is he really as bad as I think he might be? Or am I just reading the room wrong? He's just somebody who wants a debate. And you really don't know the answer to that until you get in that final act. So I was very impressed. And he also, you know, it took a lot to convince me why those girls would still be in that room, why they would get in the house and da-da-da-da. And I think he sold it. He worked it very well and made it smooth. Like the whole concept, he bought me into the concept. The direction is interesting. You get a lot of close-ups, a lot of really, like, as we're having these debates back and forth, like the camera is all up in the actors' faces. And Brian Woods and Scott Beck, they wrote the film and directed the film. And I think they've done a wonderful job of really establishing themselves as filmmakers to watch. There's a lot of, kind of magic. There's a lot of creative use of the camera. I was going to say like cinematic magic, and I just couldn't get the words right, but a lot of creative use of the camera. I really feel like these guys are directors to watch. Do you feel very similar in that respect?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you've stated this either in your review or in verbal conversation with me, but you've talked so much about how challenging it is for a film to really capture, an equitable conversation and an entertaining / enjoyable film on the topic of religion. And it is something that's very challenging. One, because you're innately going to have people that have their perspective and feelings. There's this long overstanding theory that, you know, you don't talk politics, you don't talk religion. And there are people who have very, very strong feelings, and that's why that had existed in the past. And this is, let's be very forward and approach the two perspectives here that we're really looking at and make you as uncomfortable as we're making our characters, but for a different reason. And the way that they, the way that they do their camera shots and things like that definitely elevates the emotions of the characters. It brings you in closer. It feels like you're getting into the room with them. And they do have such a unique achievement in keeping you guessing, which you brought up earlier as well. You really don't know what's what until the end, like confirmation. You might have your theories, you might have an idea, you probably have your feelings, but there's still some level of ambiguity in this film, which I like. And yet you also get some level of confirmation as to the things that you had sitting up in the air throughout the film. I know that's super vague, but that's the best I can do.
I think it's fine. So if $10 is full price for Mission, what do you give Heretic?
So, okay, I'm going to say,
I don't know.
I don't know how you say it either. I like Heretic. Initially, I think walking out of the theater, I probably would have gone like 7 or 7.50. But because I've lingered on it so much and it's been a topic of conversation, it's something that I've reflected on a lot more. That alone has to make it jump for me. Like, I want to rewatch it as well. So I'm going to go, 8.50.
Oh, wow. I'm $8 and it is Heretic, by the way. I'm at $8 and I just, maybe I would raise it. I don't know. I have had a lot of conversations about it. I really love anything that makes me converse. So that's good. Good news. All right. Thanks. Now, Troy, Getting Lost. Okay. So I don't know how in the weeds we want to get about this. This is a fan doc, about the show Lost. And it's basically on the 20th anniversary of the series for Lost, which God knows you're a fan. We don't need to rehash that. I think we've talked about that about a bazillion times. But
hashtag Losty.
Yeah, this is directed by Taylor Morden, and J.J. Abrams is in here. Like, they got the man in here, right? So they and they got the cast and some other fun bonus points for those that are fans of the show. Why would anyone want to see this?
Well, I mean, Taylor, obviously, you have to also remember, did the last Blockbuster documentary. So anybody that enjoyed that movie would definitely like the style of this one. This is for people. It's really geared towards the people that understood what Lost was about. So the people that are like the haters of Lost or don't like the ending of Lost are probably not the people that this film is for. This film is for the diehards, the people that wanted to see their friends. They wanted to go back and see, you know, what are people look like today. And it's fun to see. We were at a premiere in Chicago for this film, and it was great as characters would pop up on the screen. Like, the crowd would actually cheer for like their favorites. And it was really great to see like Nadia and the lady, Maggie Grace. Oh my gosh, Maggie Grace. I just have to say, like, you would never think the woman today that we saw in this documentary was that annoying blonde on the beach when this thing aired 20 years ago. She was so refined and her couch was amazing and fantastic. And it's just, I can't say enough. I was just enamored by Maggie Grace in that moment in the film. But it's literally a documentary about the pilot and how it changed television, which I know we've talked about ad nauseum, and the advent of social media happening at the same time Lost was taking place. And then it moves into the people, the fans and the podcasters and the whole Cancer Gets Lost thing that came out of the end of the show when they auction off items from the set and it goes into cancer research, which is tied back into one of the podcasters that was from the transmission. And obviously his wife passed away, during the course. And it's really moving to like we listen to these people weekly. We talk to these people weekly. These were people that we interacted with on boards weekly, and to like see them in the movie and then seeing all the names of people in the credits. And it's like it was like reliving those 6 years again from 2004 to 2010. And what was really great about it was a lot of behind the scenes stuff that we've never seen before. So like how they were all living on the island together and some of the stories about how whoever's episode it was that week, they would go to their house and they would have a party and it was that person's responsibility to host. And so you get to learn a lot more about the actors and like what they were going through with the show. I thought that was really an interesting twist. While it was
popular and stuff?
Yeah. Well, it was, yeah. Like how are they, like Evangeline Lilly talks about why she wanted to quit the show and like that whole background on that. They absolutely do touch on the finale and all the stuff that it got. But I think the funniest part of it was, and it's not really a spoiler because it's a documentary, but Michael Emerson is just an absolute stitch in this film. He's funny, and you're just like, I don't remember Ben being funny. But you're talking about the fans that get tattoos and stuff on them. There is a fan that literally has a almost Xerox copy of Michael Emerson's face on their back shoulder. Ew. And these people actually found the fan that has the tattoo. And so when Michael Emerson's talking about the tattoo and then they cut to the fan that has the tattoo and he's just like, I guess that's like one way to make an impression. It's like, like the jokes in this are actually really good. And Michael Giacchino actually did the film music for it as well. for the documentary, which I thought was really cool. And the fact that they got JJ and the fact that they got Damon and Carlton and Jack Bender. So, I mean, like, if you were a Lostie, like, this is your documentary. It is actually really, really good. I never squeed, cheered, laughed, cried all in the same 2 hour period as much as I did watching this, especially with a bunch of people that were also Losties. So yeah, I would totally check it out. It's a really well put together journey. There's a 4 hour version that had to get cut down into 2 hours in order to get it to obviously shop around.
You want the 4 hour version though, don't you?
From what I saw, I would, and cause we had a Q&A afterwards with the people that were involved with making the film. The things that are in that 4 hour period, there's some stuff in there that's actually really good nuggets, especially the decision by ABC to air the plane wreckage over the final credits, which was the thing that caused most of the controversy about the finale. But that got cut from the 2 hour version. So I would say it's definitely worth, if you were a Lost fan of any kind, like it's worth a 2 hour watch. It'll be coming out on digital and stuff. I think in December is what they were targeting.
Man, they missed the window. They should have done it. Like, I know they were targeting originally to release it at the premiere, right?
Well, they did premiere it in LA. I think it was the same day as the show premiered, September 22nd, 2004.
So, $10 full price admission. What do you give it?
I give it a solid $8. All right. I mean, there's some stuff in there that I wish would have been included. There's a whole reason why Matthew Fox is not in the documentary. There's a whole reason why Dominic Monaghan is not in the documentary. They explain it a little bit, but there's yeah, it's good. It's everything I wanted for putting my money behind the movie as a backer.
Okay. And I saw Red One.
Yeah, Red One is the new greatest way to make Dwayne The Rock Johnson look like super fun and awesome and bring Captain America back to life. And so they basically have to save J.K. Simmons, who plays Santa in this movie, because he gets kidnapped and they have to save Christmas. But the real question, Aaron, is do the three of these big macho actors actually work in the same movie together?
Yeah. So J.K. Simmons is Nick, you know, Saint Nick. He's codenamed Red One. And he gets kidnapped. We find out why throughout the course of the movie. And Calum is Dwayne Johnson's character. And basically what happens is he's this head of security, and now he's got to go find Nick. And his best bet is to work with Chris Evans as Jack O'Malley, who is a very big skeptic. He doesn't believe in much, much less himself. He's a crappy dad. He's really selfish. He's greedy. He's a level 4 naughty lister is what he is. But they need him because he's also a top tier tracker and apparently high tech genius. So they use him and they start working together. So you got The Rock and Captain America working together to try to find Santa Claus. That's ultimately what the plot is, and it's directed by Jake Kasdan, who did the last two Welcome to the Jungle Jumanji movies and Next Level. So, man, I walked into this knowing that the critics had beat the crap out of this movie. They basically just destroyed it, and I had nothing but a good time. I really, really enjoyed it. I found it to be quite fun. It is very PG-13. It's very much like there's some salty language here and there, shit, that sort of thing, asshole. Those, but I think they are. I think Dwayne Johnson and Chris Evans are a good pair. They work well together. Lucy Liu is also in here. You have Tormund from Game of Thrones plays Krampus, and my God, that is something I will say, like, for a movie that has an extraordinarily ridiculous budget, it's like $250 million for this movie. And I believe most of that budget was for pee bottles for The Rock. But there's a lot of special effects. There's tons of special effects in the entire movie. But they have this section that revolves around Krampus, and the costume design is fantastic. Like, I absolutely freaking love Krampus. Not only did he present Tormund from Game of Thrones. Christoph, I can never say his last name, so I just don't want to butcher it. But not only does he deliver a fantastic performance, but with the costume design connected to the performance, it just made, like, probably the coolest character in the whole movie. Like, yeah, I think he outshines The Rock and Captain America. But I love that. And yeah, it's not perfect, and there's a lot going on, and it's probably a little too busy. But man, I thought it was fun from start to finish.
Do you feel it's a Christmas movie though?
Yes, absolutely.
They capture the essence of the holiday.
Yeah, and I think they do. I think it's pretty creative. I really feel like this is a Christmas movie for the Fast and Furious crowd, is the way I would describe it. It's very much in that vein. If you want to just go and have a couple of fun action set pieces and just have a good time while also having, you know, the whole spirit of Christmas injected into your veins, then this is the kind of movie for you. I think it has all that, but it also takes a lot of creative liberties with the whole concept of Christmas and what everything means. There's a play on what an elf is and what it means. And there's all kinds of plays on different Christmas motifs and how they're really working on, like, how does Santa get into all the houses? They have technology that assists them. And there's like all this connective tissue that I think makes the movie a lot more clever and creative than I think a lot of people want to give it credit for. I was constantly going, oh, that's kind of cool. That's cool. Now you don't get the full force of how cool that could have been, but it's a really cool taste and a mix of different things. And there's a snowman fight in the tropics. You know, you've got the whole Krampus scenario. You have kind of a landing pad. You basically have the North Pole is essentially taken out of Star Wars. I mean, it looks like it was just planted from George Lucas's mind and just stuck up the North Pole. I mean, it's wild. I think there's a lot of creativity involved here. I think this is fun.
Is there enough that was not in the trailer?
I'll be honest, I barely remembered the trailer. So yeah, there was a ton. There was a ton that was not in the trailer. And I think the plotting is solid. The acting is solid all across the board. I really enjoyed it.
Music's good. Can we use this song instead of Mariah Carey going forward?
I don't know. I mean, music was fine. It was nothing that really blew my mind. But I mean, the leads, you're getting what you know. You know The Rock and you know Chris Evans. You know these guys. They're playing characters. You know, the only thing I will say, one critique I will give you that I just had a hard time getting over was Chris Evans goes in and out of a Boston accent. Like he can't decide where he is. When he's mad, he's talking just like a normal Chris Evans. But when he's just trying to be funny, he's talking very Boston-y. Okay, whatever. I don't know what that was. I don't know if that was a choice or what, but the choice wasn't consistent, so it was a little annoying at times. But overall, I enjoyed the hell out of it. I enjoyed the heck out of it, not the hell out of it.
Maybe a little North Pole time dilation drag or something.
I think it's fun. And, you know, I wouldn't take little kids, but if you've got kids that are old enough to be into stuff like Marvel, yeah, I think they'll have a good time.
$10 full price of admission. What are you giving Red? One.
$6.50.
I was going to say, I hope you're not giving it one.
No, not one. I enjoyed it more than Spirited. I'll tell you that.
Whoa.
I didn't like Spirited.
Okay.
So did everybody.
I like Spirited.
It sucked, Troy.
I even like the cut song.
Oh, boy.
I can't tell you, honestly, anything I liked.
Okay. Well, let's not stay on negative.
You tell us anything dishonestly that you liked?
Sorry.
Calm down. So let's go to recommendations. And Troy, you can drop yours first.
I don't have anything new. I've been very busy, but I will remind everybody that Silo Season 2 drops on Friday, November 15th. And I'm so excited.
Okay. Manda.
So I watched Martha, which is on Netflix. This is the Martha Stewart documentary. Whoa. I had a very different impression of her jail time experience, of like how everything went down in her case. I was missing a lot of pieces of information. And also, how amazing is it to have, I don't know, she's just a baller female businesswoman.
She's like pretty impressive.
She was a billionaire.
She's pretty impressive.
Yeah, she and she was able to maximize, which is kind of crazy. Someone used this phrase recently, maximize on her femininity, because it was all about like the housekeeping things, the, you know, better living and food and all of that stuff. And I love that she was able to switch the stereotypes and dynamics of what that means for being a woman if you enjoy doing those things. Doesn't always mean that you know, you're just going to sit, you're going to be at home and be a stay at home, which is nothing wrong with that. But it gave a lot of insight into her career, what happened, you know, with her case and where she kind of bounced back to, and also explains a lot of why she's maybe connected with Snoop, because she's just so chill. Like, she is somebody who's not here for the bullshit. So anyway, I highly recommend it if you care at all about Martha Stewart stuff. I also watched The Discovery of Witches, which is also on Netflix. This is a show that's been recommended to me by a couple of people. Essentially, it is about a woman who falls into her, family historical powers. And she's exploring what this means for her. There's also kind of like a war going on out in the world, where some vampires are trying to, you know, eliminate some of the power for witches. And there's a lot of dynamics that are moving in this, but it was a very enjoyable show. I really liked it. It wasn't full CWE, so have no fear if you're interested. Give it a go. And then the other thing that I watched is Meet Me Next Christmas, which is... also on Netflix. I promise they don't even pay for my subscription, okay? So Maybe Next Christmas is just a cute little holiday rom-com. Basically, this woman ends up meeting this guy at an airport. They are like perfect matches in so many ways, but she's in a relationship. She's not looking to, you know, go outside of that. She tells him that. They're very straightforward. You know, it was great to meet you and talk to you tonight, but that's basically about it. And he is like, well, if for some reason, by any chance, you're not committed next year, you're single, things have changed, let's meet back here at this concert, which was like a big deal for her. And so she ends up single after she finds out that her partner had been cheating on her. And so she tries to make her way back to this concert, to a Pentatonix concert, which is very hard to get tickets for in New York around Christmas. So it's that whole journey, and there's a love story with it. It was really cute. I liked that they didn't go the route of like intentional cheating. It was, hey, if things ever don't work out and you're free, let's meet up. Let's see if fate is going to bring us together. And that's really what they relied on. And I liked it.
All right. Sounds good. John?
Very cool. If you like Discovery Witches, check out Mayfair Witches. You might like that too, Amanda.
I've been thinking about it. I'd like to hear that. Thanks, John.
Yeah, no problem. I started it. I haven't gone back to it, not because I didn't like it, but because I've just been busy with other things. But it's got a great cast, and it's got a very rich history to it. And it is an Ayn Rand, I think.
Cool. Yeah, that is one that was also recommended to me on Netflix. Yeah. So I consider checking it out. I definitely will now.
So some of the things that I've got into this last couple weeks. I did catch a great little show on Starz, and it's called Sweet Pea. Fantastic little show. The tagline for it is, the girl everyone overlooks might just be able to get away with murder. It's a import from England, and it stars Ella Purnell. So if you're a big fan of Fallout, you'll love the show because it stars her. And it's a very different character, very different role. And I just love every bit of it. It is a mini series, and it has a lot of people that you've seen in other shows like Ted Lasso, and you even name it. You found them on there.
Okay, so that one sounds interesting. I mean, I like that her career is kind of taken off, because she has a very distinct look about her, and she's also very uniquely talented. So it's kind of,
yeah,
she's a good
actress. Yeah, I've thought she was a standout ever since I saw her in Mrs. Peregrine's School of Weirdos, whatever it is. But that
Mrs. Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
That's the one. You got it.
Yeah,
she's in this for weirdos. She's in that one, and she stands out in that movie. And every time she pops up in something, I really just take notice, because she is she's just very captivating in her presence.
John, have you watched Arcane season 2?
Not yet. I think it just dropped today.
Yeah, I saw something on it. It must have been today or last night or something. But I saw it, and I was like, oh gosh, I wonder if John's watched it yet. So you'll have to let me know what you think of it.
Yeah, I'll let you know. I'm going to love it. I'm sure, unless they totally just like spike the ball on that one.
So I saw Superman, Super/Man. That's a documentary of Christopher Reeve. I can't recommend that enough. It's just a very, if you are appreciative of the man who played Superman and you want to know more about his story and how he found the will to live and keep going, I think it's just, it's really heartwarming. It's very sweet. I saw it in the theater, but it's going to be coming to digital. So check that out. I can't recommend that enough. Again, it's really just a documentary on Christopher Reeve and his story and his family and his love and his wife and his children. And it's kind of told through their eyes. It's really, really, I just think, a very, very heartwarming, beautiful story. And you really learn once again, Robin Williams is maybe one of the greatest dudes that ever lived. And also The Penguin. Look, I didn't want to watch this damn show. It's on Max. I didn't care. I didn't care enough about the show. People kept telling me, you got to check it out. You got to check it out. I'm like, it just looks like The Sopranos. I didn't like The Sopranos. Yeah, I said it. I don't like The Sopranos. Still don't like The Sopranos, but this show has some great writing. And I have to say, Colin Farrell, it's got to be the best performance he's ever given. Because, and I know he's buried under makeup, for sure. But even with that, usually even when actors are buried under makeup, you still know, you can tell it's the actor. 95% of the time, I can barely tell it's Colin Farrell. And that's impressive because the dude is not exactly ugly. You know, he's not hurting the eyes. He's kind of pretty. But even what's better is he is upstaged constantly by Kristen Milioti. She plays Sophia Falcone, who's the daughter of Falcone from the movie, The Batman. And she is phenomenal. Like, phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Have you watched it?
Yeah. I only watched one episode, but they, yeah.
As that series goes, she has this, they give her such a rich backstory, and it just landed its series finale, I think, unless they bring it back for another season. But she is phenomenal. She goes so up and down, and she's all over the place. But I think it's episode 4 where they kind of give her full backstory, and she runs every gamut of emotion you can imagine, and it's fantastic. She is just a wonderful, wonderful actress, and I hope that's really like catapults her to stardom because, my God, she crushed. In a show called The Penguin, I was following her story more than anybody's. Like, she's just great. So there you go.
Wow, you really don't rave that hard usually about somebody, man. So I'll definitely keep watching.
She impressed me. All right, so now we're going to do back to pop culture debates, but we're going to do listener. These are listener recommended debate questions, and we're going to do like a speed round. Okay. So I'm going to do them and just try to be a little faster. Adam Smith, what actors are so good in the role that fans would never accept a recast in future projects? Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones, don't you touch it, but I would go see it. You guys, what do you got?
I think people are innately curious that they would still go see it. But
that's true.
He says he accept. Said, yeah, he does say accept. So which ones would you be okay with? And I don't know. Maybe
he's saying, yeah, actors that were so good in the role,
like a Tom Cruise from Mission Impossible. I don't think that they could make that with somebody else.
They could make a different character.
They could, but he's saying recast. In his role.
That's right. You're right. Yep. I'm with you. Mm-hmm. Nobody can run that fast.
He's one of the very few, despite how I feel, he's one of the very few movie stars that we have left. And we've talked about that on previous episodes too.
I would say Tom Hanks and Forrest Gump.
Perfect. Yep.
I thought about that too. That. Mm-hmm.
Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction.
It's a good one.
I was going to say the same thing, but for the actress.
The actress that you don't know off the top of your head and you think we can't recast her?
I forgot her name. I've got the character's name sitting in my head. Yeah, Uma Thurman.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I think she could be recast. No offense to Uma.
Really?
Yeah, in that movie, yeah.
I'm obsessed with her in that movie.
Okay. John, you got anybody?
No.
Okay.
I'm usually okay with it, just about anyone recasting as long as you do a good job with it. It's hard for me to be like, all right. Usually a recast means a whole new story anyways.
All right. Well, speaking of Roni Godchal. I hope one of those is right. Remaking classic.
I don't think either one of them are right.
Remaking classic films. Is this really necessary or better to leave it alone? Same with turning animated classics into live action. I actually like the live action animated ones because to me that feels different because I honestly am not an animated guy. So I'd much rather see it in live action. So that's a me thing. classic films, if something is a timeless classic, I say leave it alone personally, but people want to make money. But I would, unless you're putting a new spin on it, leave it alone. That's my take.
I'm very much about the idea of putting new spins on things, so or reframing things so that a new generation can attach to it the way that the previous generation can. Something that will drive people to look at the history or look at the story behind whatever it is they're looking at. That's I'm for that.
Yeah, you can totally remake old classics as long as you make it for the generation that you're trying to make it for. And then as far as the live action, it all just depends on the technology at the time. So if the technology looks good, then go ahead and do it. Like, I thought Lion King was actually a pretty good use of the technology. And I thought the Beauty and the Beast remake was really good too. Little Mermaid. Sorry. Missed the boat. Actually, it sunk in a hurricane.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Well, it did.
Feisty.
Storm came up. She had to save Eric from the water, you know.
Wow. Amanda, you got an opinion here?
It just depends. And usually there's some resistance to remaking something, but when it comes out, it's hit or miss. You might love it, you might hate it. It just depends. So I'm not opposed to it though. And I do like the animated ones turning into live action. So I agree with you there, Aaron.
Jennifer Miller. Oh, the age old question. We've done it 100 times, but let's just knock it out. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? It is, but people still debate it. You've answered it yourself.
Yes, it is. Yes.
It's a Hanukkah movie.
Oh, shut up.
Jesus.
John.
Oh. Deck the menorah. Michael Weinrich. Is the movie ever better than the book? Ooh, I have an answer for that people might not like. Go ahead, you guys.
I'm going to say that it can be, depending on the movie or the book. A prime example is Lovecraft Country, the TV show. Mm-hmm. The book for that TV show is not nearly as good as the TV show itself.
Okay.
Well, and the TV show is really well cast because of the whole Lovecraft connection, and that like just is like chef's kiss. I don't have an example off the top of my head where the movie was better than the book. I'm sure there is one.
It's called Mean Girls, Troy. That's the answer.
That is a good one. But yeah, the book, I don't like the question again, because it's different. The medium.
Troy, you just don't like the question because you don't have an answer.
No, holy
because
shit.
I don't have an answer.
We need to pack our bags because Troy is taking us on a trip right now.
The medium if you make the thing for the medium, it doesn't matter which one's better. They're both equally fine.
Okay. Well, I'll give you
there are plenty of times they're not.
Yeah, there's plenty of times where they're not. Sometimes they're just, and I'll give you an example, and it won't be a popular one, but I don't care. I believe it. It's not, I'm not just saying it to be, you know, different. Lord of the Rings, the extended editions are better than the books depending on how you perceive
shit.
It. This is my opinion, bitch. I personally, and I read the whole frickin' tome. It is a slog to get through. It's hard to read. And I would absolutely say, and this applies to Game of Thrones too, because I think that book, while yes, the world is extremely layered and everything else, it's a slog to read. I have the same feeling about Harry Potter, the first book. I didn't really like, but it's not as in depth about Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings, I thought Peter Jackson, especially in the extended editions, captured everything I need to feel that world and live in that world and kind of coast through it.
Except so, the one critical character.
I think you just insulted Troy's lineage right now. That's what I'm hearing.
Maybe. I mean, this is my opinion.
No, the extended editions, like, love the book. Extended editions are really, really good. But when you don't put in Tom Bombadil, you are not better than the book.
Okay.
Tom Bombadil is a big, important character.
That's an opinion. And
who's Tom Bombadil?
That's right. People don't know who Tom Bombadil is because you didn't read the book. Read the book.
You're right. No, thank you.
Aaron's right. Over here. Hey, Troy, I got a Vlasic for you. Here we go.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Peter did a really great job capturing as much of the book as he possibly could in 12 hours.
I feel like he captured everything about the essence that I needed, and it's much easier to get through.
Although I feel like you can't speak on this topic because you like bitch about the ending being like 5 different endings.
I do stop it when they bow, but I think the book should have stopped too. The book's got way longer of an ending. Like, you think it's the ending's long in the movie? Jesus Christ, stop already. I just wanted it to end.
He's like, what about this idea? But what about that idea?
Let's just keep going.
Oh, but I didn't get this in
here. It's like Troy, the book.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's funny.
Oh, you gave him a belly laugh.
All right, we're trying to wrap this podcast up. Ty Nelson, this is I like this question. Professional wrestling is an episodic scripted serialized television show. It has an athletic component as well as a live performance aspect. Its storytelling can be as ridiculous and eye-rolling as any reality show, but it can be as nuanced and moving as any scripted program on television. I must not have seen wrestling in any recent time. In short, it is an art form that deserves more mainstream respect and should be recognized for Emmy consideration discuss. That's a guy who likes wrestling.
So my hand was raised.
Okay.
Okay, it's a podcast, though.
Yeah, we.
I know.
She just wants to be heard.
Your voice should be raised.
You recognize your hand. Proceed.
Does that mean tag in? Is this like a wrestling thing? Okay, yeah. I'm in. I think it should be a reality show, Emmy. Yes, from 100%. There you go.
I have recently spent quite a bit of time watching wrestling.
So you're dating someone who likes wrestling.
Okay, yes.
Noted.
But
wait, are you still playing Warhammer? Or did you
Warhammer or D&D?
Either. Did you give that up for wrestling?
No.
Okay, cool.
No. All right,
I'm going back to my corner.
Yeah, let me share my thoughts on the wrestling and then you'll feel better for sure. So I was always of the mind that wrestling was very ridiculous and outlandish. And because it was all fake, I was like, what's the point of watching it? It's just fake. It's just reality TV, basically. And while that is all true, I have actually come to have some level of an appreciation and clearly had no idea how many amazing actors came from wrestling. But they have to really figure out what their persona is, who their character is, how they're going to deliver that, how they're going to engage with people. And while they do have a lot of it scripted out, I guess they also do a lot of like real-time impromptu, you know, physical engagement. And I thought that stuff was kind of fake. I guess sometimes they are, you know, really throwing each other around. So I have a lot more appreciation for it than I ever used to. With that being said, sir, I get real bored real quick. That's my thoughts.
I think it should be up for reality. I mean, it's a reality show as far as I'm concerned. And I hate to break it to you, but all reality is scripted.
It's true. I mean, you don't think that those votes end up in the box and Survivor in a particular order to make the drama better after they go up to collect the urn? Wrestling. I loved wrestling when I was a kid. I actually saw Hulk Hogan and Randy Macho Man Savage actually break up when Elizabeth got hurt in the Milwaukee Arena. And the story was amazing. And you're just like, what's happening right now? So yeah, I definitely think it could qualify for an Emmy. I just don't think it's got the same level of panache as like what the Emmys would be putting up. Plus the Emmys we talked about earlier are just a bad ceremony to begin with. But I definitely think that wrestling is an art form on what they're able to do.
I'm just being snarky. Look, I know my brother freaking loves wrestling and he loves Japanese wrestling. He loves all forms of wrestling. So he's constantly telling me, don't you ever look down on wrestling. So I am not going to look down on wrestling. Or he used to when he lived here. Now he's in Cambodia. So Brad, for you, I think it should be recognized as a top tier drama show. And I think each of the performers should be nominated for Emmys, maybe even Oscars. Let's just skip the whole TV media.
Throw it all to the wind.
Some of them have become governors, so why not?
Absolutely. So last,
that is
last true. One, Jason West. When will AI make the movie experience uncomfortable, like not knowing what is real and not? I'll defer to John to start.
It's going to happen a lot sooner than anyone thinks because, you know, well, the thing you have to remember about AI is that AI is the worst it's going to be from here on out as of right this moment because it just keeps on getting better. The the problem is like it's all going to be about training. It's going to be about training your eye to be able to see it when it happens, because it is going to be a distinct problem for some people who look at something and they're like, oh, that's cool. That's got to be done by a person. It's, I have so many feelings when it comes to AI. Personally, myself as an artist and someone who's, who creates my, I create a lot of my own images. I have learned to use and appreciate AI for the spitballing aspects of it. So I sit there and I have conversations with my friend Chad Gepetti, which is what I call my ChatGPT. And I throw ideas at it. It throws ideas back at me, and I start boiling down images from those ideas, and not necessarily graphical images. Sometimes I ask for some graphical feedback, but a lot of times it's just having a conversation back and forth. The cool side of that is that you can't create in a bubble. And the fact that not all of us have access to a group of people that you can have these sort of conversations with to use it to create. Again, I'm just focusing on a lot of the tool aspects, but it is problematic when you're starting to look at who owns these images. And usually nobody does. Not even the companies that are selling you these images own them. And so that's the one saving grace as to why we're not going to see it a lot in movies and television, is because nobody really owns this stuff, because nobody, like, a computer's creating it.
Yeah. I'm not worried about the uncanny valley aspect of it, because I'll worry about it when they start fooling me more. I still don't think they're at a point where I can't tell the difference.
Yeah, there's always going to be that small sign to look for. Mm-hmm. If you understand human anatomy well enough, you'll be able to find it. If you understand how many fingers we have, you'll be able to find it. Stuff like that. Also, there's a lot in the way of how lighting shifts and whatnot over these images.
3 years.
When artists lose a battle over rights.
I love that. Troy's just like, 3 years. Okay. Well, that was fun. That's it. We're done. We're getting out of here. So remember, everybody, debate these on your own terms. Tell us in the comments. Share it on social media. Tell us your thoughts on social media. I don't care on any of these, what your thoughts are, how right or wrong we are about anything in particular. And remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn.